Welcome to another episode of Our Interesting Times. It's my pleasure to have Russ Winter back on the show. Of course, Russ is the proprietor of Winter Watch. So, Russ, how you doing?
Strange days. For an old guy, this is some of the strangest period of my life.
Yeah, it seems to be very normal.
where I am, Central Europe, we're locked. We can't leave the country. If you can't come back in, unless you're a Czech national or a resident here. So it's a very, very strange environment. It's kind of spooky, very haunted feeling to it. And you go out and you realize that these businesses aren't coming back. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah, it might be part of the plan. Well, the coronavirus, COVID-19, COV-19, this global pandemic that has terrified the world and shut down the West, the industrialized West, economically. Why is that? Well, we are told that this is a particularly virulent, dangerous disease, but if you look at the numbers currently, I just checked this morning, and there are 679,005 known corona cases. That's very important, known, because there are many, they say they're untested, they're asymptomatic. 31,771 deaths, 146,000 recoveries. Among infected patients, 95% report mild conditions, 5% serious or critical. In the United States, here we have 123,781. They reported the 100,000 milestone a couple of days ago, as if that mattered. Deaths are 2,220 reported. And of course, this is reported because many people are aware of the problems with the testing, diagnostics, and the reporting, the fraud that's going on, the diagnostic fraud that's going on. Now, let's put this in perspective. I got this from an article from John Rappaport, and he says a study published in the journal Pharmacy Therapeutic states influenza is a highly contagious respiratory illness that is responsible for significant morbidity and mortality. Approximately 9% of the world's population is affected annually, with up to 1 billion infections, 3 to 5 million severe cases, and 300,000 to 500,000 deaths each year. The flu, another citation, the flu has resulted in 9.3 million to 49 million illnesses since 2001. 5 to 20% of the United States of the U.S. population gets the flu. It is estimated that the flu results in 31.4 million outpatient visits and more than 200,000 hospitalizations each year. During the severe 2017-2018 flu season, it's very recent. Trusted source, one of the longest in recent years, estimates indicate that more than 900,000 people were hospitalized and more than 80,000 people died from the flu. So, what's going on here? So we're seeing the numbers we're given, the data we're given, doesn't really seem to justify the panic, the lockdowns that are occurring. Yet we're seeing the media blare these terrifying headlines. There's a death count running on the media in these things. But there's nothing, again, this is nothing extraordinary. I saw an account. Now, even the reported death numbers are problematic. I saw an account in Germany where a German doctor, I think you posted this, a 78-year-old German man who was in palliative care, late stage esophageal carcinoma, recently passed away. Just before he died, he tested positive for the coronavirus, and he counted as Germany's 52nd death to corona. So we have a situation where people may be dying with corona, but not of corona, so they're boosting the numbers. That also, the whole, whether or not this is even whether or not it even exists or not, because you can extrapolate or you can pull from the regular flu season something like this, but that's a whole other issue. But it is interesting. Now,
well, they do that even in normal times, because when my father died, he was 96 years old, and he was just died of natural causes. He was worn out. That was it. And I noticed on his death certificate that they had it listed as prostate cancer. Well, he'd had prostate cancer for 10 years, but that's not what killed him.
Yeah.
Prostate was pretty benign. So for some reason, they have to they can't just let people die of natural causes. They have to put a reason. So this is perfect for that.
Yeah, it's also a way. If they boost, they say when they say flu, people dying, it's flu related or flu symptoms. It's pneumonia, and there's a lot of aviral or bacterial or even environmental causes for pneumonia. That's something you can think about in northern Italy and in China. Where the environment.
Well, respiratory pneumonia is actually called the old man's, the old man's blessing.
Yeah. And so they've done this. They've shipped all these deaths over for Corona because they want to push this agenda, apparently. So this is what's going on. Now, again, we've had this economic lockdown in the West, United States, about a good 40% of the economy is shut down. And of course, that has. That's going to have, it's going to reverberate. It's not just that. We don't know what the effects of this will be in the ensuing months. That's, economies are complex, with supply chains, employment, production, these things. Things that we think are, disappear magically on the food in the store aren't going to be there because of the shutdown. So when, people are watching Netflix and they're binge watching Netflix, they're going to find out they're going to be running out of potato chips or something, The lockdown itself, the economic shutdown. Why is that? Well, let's look at the timeline, and I'll let you get in. In September, we heard reports of the repo market, the repurchase market freezing up, the bond market, treasuries, and also corporate debt, corporate bonds, and so the Fed was filling the gap, adding liquidity to hold off the crisis. In October, we have this event 2002. I'm sorry, event 201, which is a war game scenario. I think it was conducted by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Johns Hopkins, and the World Economic Forum. This is the people that get together at Davos every year to discuss the future of humanity. And they gamed this very scenario. And lo and behold, in November, this virus breaks out. In January, it starts to spread to the West. And by February, late February, this pandemic and the economies are shut down. So there's that's that timeline. Very convenient because now, I think as your article suggests, is this is a cover for economic reset or a financial coup, a global heist. And they need the terror, they need the trauma, and they also need the economic calamity or economic catastrophe to justify it. And so this is what we're confronted with. It's very interesting, unfortunately, in the worst way. So Russ, I'll let you take it from there.
Well, it's over-the-top terror and fear and abuse. And the abuse is being dished out on a really wide scale, particularly in the developed countries. So this is far, far, far worse than they've done really going back to 9/11. This is actually in some ways on an international basis worse because they're dragging in a lot of smaller countries like the one I live in and in Europe and into the whole, and they're just outdoing themselves with the criminality, I think. And it's a perfect storm for police, or more accurately, gray state capture, and what I call a parasite guild, which we can get into. It's a evil, draconian, dark triad personalities behind this. And the dark triad personality is narcissistic, Machiavellian, and psychopathic. And they will deliberately cause large numbers of people to lose their income to create a increasingly vulnerable population to exploit and lord over. And I think that perfectly describes the operation. It's not really a reset. They want to loot. And I've been talking about this for a couple years. I think in one of our earlier interviews, we talked about it, but it was more theoretical at that point. This is for real. So even if you gave them the benefit of the doubt that there's a panic and they're overreacting to the situation, there's enough evidence right now that they can dial back, and they haven't. They're doubling down.
Yes,
they've got
that's
this
the
Cuomo
thing.
Clown out there. He's a double downer, and they're probably going to insert him as president.
You have the governors and the mayors that seem to be doubling down. There seems to be some hesitation in the Trump administration. But yeah, as the stats fail to come in, as the good news comes in, the headlines and the political rhetoric gets more grim, and that's what's very interesting, and becomes more absurd. I think the question is, can they keep it up? Because the reality on the ground simply doesn't justify the reaction. I think recently Trump was talking about quarantining the New York metropolitan area, and I had a thought. I said, well, Given Governor Cuomo's rhetoric, doesn't a quarantine make sense? Has he been cornered into his own? Then Cuomo comes out and says, I don't think it's legal. I had to laugh at that.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you have you got some videos that have gone up the last few days put out by Jason Goodman. And Jason has gone into some of the hospitals or near in the area of the hospitals. And
I was
some
watching
of
this morning, yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing there. Yeah. You know, where is it? Where is everybody?
And I think in New York they have like a triage system set up and it's empty or something. Because, you know, this is part of that funding. They're going to build these things because it's funding.
Well, the Javits Center is supposed to be a really big operation. And if they're having this tsunami rolling in, then that place should be very active. You should have lots of very clear evidence that you have something going on. So where is everybody? Where are all the ambulances? One of the things that people are saying, well, the tsunami is still coming.
Yes.
The tsunami is still coming. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see. But meanwhile, they have this inexpensive treatment that's been very successful in trials, France and China and New York, Belgium, elsewhere, Behran. It's called hydrochloroquine.
Mm-hmm.
It's an anti-malarial medication, and it's administered in combination with zinc sulfide and azithromycin.
Yeah.
They've known about this cure all along.
Well, that's probably something you can't patent, nor does they want to create a pretext for a vaccine. And this gets into
yes.
the, we sort of have a bankster agenda here, economic heist, a fraud. There's also a geopolitical and technocratic agenda here. We see that with Bill Gates. And Bill Gates, this revenge of the nerds scenario where he becomes this guru that everyone looks to about how civilization should be governed or what's the future of civilization. He's been kind of pimping the idea of a pandemic for years. That's sort of he gets very excited about this, to say that. But he has this ID 2020 thing where they use nanotechnology. I don't know if this is even feasible, but they're claiming that what they can do is now, because of the pretext of a contagion, a complete technocratic monitoring is necessary, using our cell phones to track us to see if we're near any hotspots. So we ourselves have to be subjected to testing, which then they admit is not reliable, 83% false positive. This idea of tracking, using basically chipping us all, you know, like animals, like a herd, to contain the pandemic. And this speaks to the power of the medical cartel, which is, as John Rappaport says, is the most dangerous because it comes across as being apolitical when it certainly is not. It's a control mechanism. It isn't to say that, you know, every doctor and nurse is in on it, but they're definitely brainwashed because they're part of the medical system.
Well, the thing is that the apolitical doctors out there are actually doing things like running tests on this hydrochloroquine combination.
Well, the doctors that stray away from the pack and say something critical are ostracized, yeah.
Yeah, and they're just sort of outside this little loop that they're running, but you can't control everybody, so they come out, and even Trump himself picked up on this thing, and they try to make him look, you know, I am absolutely no fan of Trump, get this wrong, but on this particular issue, he brings it up as a possible treatment, and they mock him.
Yeah.
The New York Slimes, as they call it, just ran a bunch of crap on the guy, and they've been running a resistance to this treatment. So,
and there's another thing, there's no coverage of the agencies that were called, that we looked to guide us in a public health emergency that they claim exists. I don't think it exists. There's nothing exceptional outside a moderate to harsh cold and flu season is the CDC and the World Health Organization, organizations which we should have no confidence in given their long history of corruption. The current head of the World Health Organization isn't even a medical doctor. Some might say that's a good thing. Depends what opinion of the medical system is. But it's Tedros Adhanom, who is a suspected war criminal out of Ethiopia. He was a Marxist head of the TPL there, which is still on the book. The TPL is a political party in Ethiopia, which is still listed as a terrorist organization. And he presided over a depopulation and cover-up of pandemics, of a cholera pandemic in Ethiopia. And he's the head of the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization a while back was caught engaged in during the swine flu fake epidemic, where they raised the fear, the alarm bells over, or rang the alarm bells over the swine flu epidemic that never existed, just so they could sell billions of dollars of vaccines that were never used. This, once there was declared a pandemic, governments of the EU were forced to purchase these drugs from Big Pharma, and that was a big scandal there. Of course, the CDC itself is linked in the World Health Organization. They themselves were caught overinflating or creating a false fear over the swine flu in 2009. Cheryl Atkinson at CBS News covered that. That was always done. That's done again to guarantee this the purchase and sale and perhaps use of vaccines. I think they buy billions of dollars worth of vaccines every year from the various pharmaceutical agency, companies. So these aren't independent organizations. The head of the CDC, I think it was Gerbiner or Julie Gerbiner, the name, went to work for Merck after she left CDC. So this we have this revolving door problem. The same thing also applies to the FDA. So all these agencies that we look to for guidance to regulatory, safety concerns, and also to track these pandemics and viruses, they can't be trusted. So the numbers they cite, which many people have, to raise the fear, can't be deemed reliable because they're involved in spreading the fear. That they're not reliable organizations or trustworthy.
Well, but separately, you have a big boondoggle going on and pork going on. Mm-hmm. You have the Army Corps of Engineers is building 114 facilities for the expected tsunami, the mysterious tsunami, wherever it is. That's got a lot of money.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money being wasted. So it's a great opportunity to waste money, squander a lot of money.
The same with the war on terror, the friends,
the flying monkeys that these people work with and make them rich.
Well, remember the war on terror, what that unleashed with contracts and in Iraq and also the security theater industry. Now the war on bioterror is going to unleash the same, corruption, the same, boondoggling that we're going to see, coupled with further restrictions of civil liberties and attempts by the government to control everybody under the guise of containing a pandemic. Now, the problem with that, with the contagion narrative is, like with the war on terror, and James Corbett made this point recently on his show, a very important point. With the war on terror, at least they had to show, at least making the case that you had evil intent, malevolent intent, to be a terrorist. This, you don't even have to have malevolent intent. Everyone is a potential bioweapon, unintentionally, because you can spread the contagion.
Yeah.
And this is a product of a century of medical cartel propaganda, brainwashing everybody, thinking that we have to be terrified of germs, the microbe is going to get you.
They made a big deal about all those kids down in Florida partying and calling them the spreaders.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
They're just kind of going, hey, they're making probably a correct calculation that I could party and have a good time.
And get some vitamin D.
Maybe I'll get the flu and I'll just make sure I don't go visit grandma. That's not unreasonable.
Well, it's kind of what everyone did when they're in their 20s.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I would not want to miss out on that.
I have no doubt they're engaging in a lot of unhealthy activity. I won't get.
But you don't want to miss out on it when you're 21.
Look back and say, boy, I was dumb, but I had fun, right?
Yep.
My point is that even Louis Pasteur, the guy who came up with the germ theory, on his deathbed, he said it's terrain that's everything, meaning that they're germs, but we live in a sea of germs all the time, and usually they're either benign or beneficial. What happens is something happens where that balance of power is shifted, so to speak, and we get ill. What that does is suggest a whole different type of treatment other than shots and drugs. It means health and clean air and these things. But those things can't be patented. What they do is the medical system wants everyone sick all the time, getting probed, poked, jabbed, analyzed. So by the end of our life, we've been diagnosed with a dozen or so diseases that they've drained us through our insurance plans. And
part of life is getting sick.
Yes.
And you'll learn that as you get older, too. So you just get sick. Part of the game.
You know how bad it is? A friend of mine sent me a picture locally. The kids are home, so he took his kids out to play outside to the local park in his neighborhood where they have swing sets and slides. And the police have wrapped tape around the slides and swing sets. Police tape.
Oh, my God. That's just abuse. It's abuse. It's total abuse.
Yeah, that's how insane it is.
I guess I'm just really curious who comes up with this stuff and who's directing it. We really have to get to the bottom of this because it can't just be ignorance. It's got to be malevolence.
Yeah, well, it's funny how the infrastructure for this. Now, if you watch that event 201, that gives us a glimpse into perhaps how the operation is carried out, because in that event 201, they interface with people in the media, local governments. The same way that Agenda 21 is kind of being carried out is through state and local initiatives. It's given the air of being localized, but it's really top-down controlled, and this is done through the foundation funding. I saw a friend of mine sent me a link yesterday that apparently the prediction for the shortages of ventilators came from an organization that received $275 million grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
So they're going to want to make them whole. They're going to want, even though there's probably not that much threat, they want to make them whole. So the money will be spent. It'll be taken out of this stimulus package for sure.
The grim predictions in the United States and in the UK came out of this Imperial College, which has been known for pushing the climate scam, the climate, global warming hysteria. And now they've gone back and revised those numbers down. In the UK, they've gone from 500,000 to 5,700 projected deaths. Of course, they're claiming this is because of the lockdown, which really hasn't been implemented. Maybe they've shuttered businesses, but people are walking around. And the same thing. So this is the...
They're doing victory laps.
Yeah, okay. They're patting themselves. They shut down the economy. They relegate everyone to unemployment and future misery, but they pat themselves on the back. And they say, you're welcome to everybody. What's going to happen.
Right.
But the justification for the initial lockdown was based on these predictions that called for 2.2 million U.S. deaths and 500,000 U.K. deaths. Now the numbers have been revised to 20,000 in the United States, which is well within the variable of a cold and flu season. And to 57.
And they're still doubling down.
They're still doubling down. Now, put this in perspective. In 1958, we had the Asian flu that took 135,000 American lives out of a population of less than 200 million. Mostly old and sick, unfortunately. That's life. And in 1968, the Hong Kong flu took almost 40,000 American lives. That's out of a nation of maybe 220 million at the time, 200 million. So why wasn't there a pandemic? Why wasn't the economy shut down then? So you have to put these things in perspective. Even during the great pandemic, the influenza pandemic of 1918-1919, which was aggravated by the current conditions, World War One, trenches, barracks, troop transport ships, upset. You know, people's diet were upset. You know, war tends to do that. Took anywhere from 20 to 60 million lives globally. Economies weren't shut down. Life went on,
one of the little mind games they're playing, since the total sick are sort of nebulous, I would call it nebulous, ghost sick.
Yes.
They have to come up with this term they call testing positive.
Yeah.
And what shadow language, what does that even mean? I mean, I tested when I was 19 years old. I tested positive for tuberculosis. Well, all that means is that I was exposed to it, and my immune system responded and defeated it. I never had tuberculosis. I never was a factor. If you tested me now at 69, I'm assuming I would still test positive for tuberculosis, wouldn't I?
Yeah, tuberculosis is a poverty disease, and so the way you cure it, is not through injections. It's through better diet, sanitation, and higher standards of living, i.e. supporting the middle class economy. And that's how they defeated tuberculosis. That's how they defeated, scarlet fever, at least the symptoms of blindness.
But the point is, you can be infected, I guess that's the word for it, and it won't have any effect on you if you're healthy.
Yeah, and so, or just the testing that they use for this, the PCR test is the major one. I heard in China they're using CT scans, which is more like you're eyeballing it. You're just looking at, people with pneumonia. Of course, in China, 300,000 people a year die from pneumonia. Millions have it because of the conditions there. The mass industrialization that's occurred in the past few decades has really polluted the environment out there. The water tables, the air, you can't see. You look out a window, you can't see the building next to you. They had protests in China last year over this, and it takes a lot to get Chinese to protest. So you can look at why the Chinese government would hype the virus narrative to justify a political, a repression of the protests there. There aren't any protests. And look throughout Europe, where are the yellow vests, right?
Yeah.
So, if you can't get in a group of more than 10 people, how do you exercise the right to free assembly?
Well, that part of it is really suspect. Even two, and even more than two people in some instances, that's really a suspect. That there's no justification of that at all.
Well, what they've done is they've created a nations of neurotics, of people with it's a mass psychosis. You have people now, you know, you go in the grocery stores, they're washing down the checkout counters between every customer. They have these yellow stripes. You can't get within 10 feet of somebody. Everyone's wearing masks and gloves and these things. They're afraid of germs. It's the contagion narrative. And so, and they've created a bunch of people with, basically they've created, obsessive compulsive disorder writ large in everybody.
Well, here's what's ahead. Because you were mentioning the Imperial College of London, I think their centerpiece of this thing is they came out with their, which I would say is a game plan. Mm-hmm. And they say, quote, "We show that in the UK and the US context, suppression will minimally require a combination of social distancing of the entire population, home isolation of cases, and household quarantine of their family members. This may need to be supplemented by school and university closures. This type of intensive intervention package or something equivalently effective at reducing transmission will need to be maintained," and here's in bold, "until a vaccine becomes available."
Yes. So
They have a chart here that shows going forward, it's a water dunking, it's waterboarding. They're going to let you come out for a while, then they're going to put you back into quarantine. They're going to let you come out a while. It's a lot of surveillance, a lot of enforcement. Mm-hmm. And it looks like about two-thirds of the time going forward over the next year and a half is going to be under some form of what they call suppression.
And, of course, an effect of that would be economic depression.
Yes, absolutely.
So more people are going to become sick and ill,
and poor,
depressed and poor, just from the external conditions they've created. Stress itself is a major cause of disease, weakens the immune system, poor diet, lower exposure to the sun, and people will come out in the spring and they should be getting more vitamin D. First of all, this is the reason why we have the idea of a cold and flu season itself isn't because the bug becomes more virulent in a certain time period. It's because people are getting less vitamin D. So people are weaker. So it is indeed the terrain, and they admit that in their own rhetoric. Now they're just forgetting it. And what's what they're creating? Anthony Fauci, or the El Duce here, the our health minister, our health dictator. Again, this is all part of that technocracy. No one voted for him. He comes out and says this may come in waves. Everything's brought. They don't know anything. So they're supposedly the experts, and they're all saying, "Well, this could happen. We have this prediction." This could happen, but he's saying that this could come in waves, like every year. It's like, well, yeah, that's called cold and flu season. So,
probably what's going to happen is it's going to die out here after this so-called tsunami. We'll see what that actually looks like, and then, Trump's talking about sending people back to work around Easter. What's that?
It's a funny date he picks.
Yeah.
Rebirth.
Yeah. Yeah. One of my readers says he thought it would be Passover. somewhere in that mid-April period, they'll kind of call quits for a while because they, this is what we'll get into next. And I think the real objective besides this gray state system was the full tilt control by the parasite guild.
Yeah. So let's... So let's get into this, the details of this. Trump signed a $2 trillion stimulus rescue package, as they call it. It's also the additional gives the Treasury the discretion to create $4 trillion to bail out the economic system, which is to bail out the fat cats on Wall Street. So let's get into some of your articles.
Well, I wrote my article on February the 4th. I predicted this would be a black swan. And at the time, the stock market was oblivious to it, just sleeping, snoozing through it. And I kind of thought, this is going to be it. They're going to bust the everything bubble. I call it the everything bubble, which was just needed a pinprick. It didn't need anything. It would be very easy to burst. Well, they did that and got the big wipe out of the markets. You could call it a markets. I don't call it a market anymore. Something else. It's actually a kabuki theater. And they got this measure through. It's in a way, I was a little surprised at how easy it was to rubber stamp it. considering how you're talking about not a $2 trillion deficit this year, but $3 trillion, because there's already a $1 trillion deficit. And so it's direct payments, tax deferral, and a lot of pork. So that'll take the deficit up to $3 trillion, which will crater the financing. It's going to be a huge impact on the U.S. Treasury. But the degree of compromise and servility in the Congress and the government, it was revealed how easy it was for them to get this thing passed. And what's blatantly obvious is that the Federal Reserve has hired a large hedge fund, BlackRock, a.k.a. FedRock, to run its stock and credit market tamperings and manipulations and interventions. So they don't even, the Fed's admitting they don't even have the staff to do it. So they bring in a hedge fund run by a guy named Fink, and you can Google that, Lawrence Fink. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Let's see.
Okay. So the, I'll explain these programs. We'll go through this. The Treasury has committed to become a 10% equity holder in a new round of TALF, special purpose vehicles, that are being set up and planned by the New York Fed. So this is basically a privatize the gains and socialize the loss hedge fund controlled by Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin. So in essence, the Treasury, not the Fed, is buying these securities and backstopping the loans, because the Fed's acting as a banker and providing the financing, but they will also make a small equity investment in the SPV, the special project vehicles that will take the first loss position. So it's essentially privatizing gains.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Steve Mnuchin. He has an interesting pedigree, doesn't he?
I'll go into that. Okay. I'm definitely going to go into that. So we'll go through that in a second. So once an SPV blows through $10 billion of losses, it just takes a technical adjustment for the taxpayer to be on the hook for more. So this is a monumental loot on top of the $3 trillion deficit. The country's never going to come out of this. There's no frigging way. They'll have to start printing money, monetizing it, Weimarizing everything, which will end up with more poverty, more stealing, more looting. So in addition, they've taken $454 billion worth of taxpayers' money from the Treasury and dumped it into this murky, secretive Treasury Exchange Stabilization Fund, known as ESF. And the ESF is the central modern mechanism of what I've been calling the new underworld order crime syndicate. It's one of the main off-balance sheet, dark pools, black op vehicles. They've been using this ever since World War II, ever since they organized OSS, this thing was created. And it was actually created by Harry Dexter White, who's another sketchy case. I have an article on that if you want to read about that. We'd be here for 2 hours going through all, you know, two more hours, 4 hours going through all these sketchy characters. But my article has more detail on him, so you can understand the pedigree in the beginning of ESF. Well, now they've kind of expanded. So here's what the Trumpian mucky muck, Lawrence Kudlow, said at the press conference. Quote, "And finally, I want to mention the Treasury's Exchange Stabilization Fund. That will be replenished." So what he means by replenished is right now it has $90 billion worth of assets and $50 billion worth of liabilities, so net $40 billion. So they say, so they claim. So that doesn't sound like much, right? So when he's talking about replenishing, he's saying we're going to put another $454 billion in, bring it up to $500 billion. And he says, this is important because that fund opens the door for the Federal Reserve firepower to deal in a broad-based way through the economy for distressed industries, for small businesses, for financial turbulence caused by this lockdown, by the way, this draconian lockdown, right?
Yes, yeah.
You've already seen the Fed take action, he says. They intend to take more action. In order to get this action, we need to replenish the emergency fund. It's very, very important. Not everybody understands that. That fund, by the way, will be overseen by an oversight board and an inspector general. So the total package here will come to $6 trillion, $2 trillion direct, and $4 trillion in Federal Reserve lending. So the Federal Reserve $4 trillion is the leveraging of the money the Treasury is putting in to backstop for these criminals to go and speculate.
Mm-hmm.
You follow? You follow the sequence?
Yeah.
Just opens the door. And so conditionally, the Secretary of Treasury can only spend money that has been appropriated by Congress. But now, with the consent of the President, the Secretary has substantial leeway to use the money in the ESF. And he can do pretty much anything he wants. There's no restrictions. He may deal in gold, foreign exchange, other instruments of credits and securities. Now, that's in the law that they just passed. Other instruments of credits and securities. So that's about anything.
They can monetize anything then.
They can really pretty much monetize it. Yeah. People are joking. You know, people are going to be bringing in used bicycles.
Yeah.
So I call it the Harry Carey bill. So it'll provide collateral that can be further leveraged, and they can hyper manipulate the economy and do all kinds of games. Now let's talk about old Steve Mnuchin.
Now first, all this is allowed because of the emergency, and the emergency is the virus, and this is why we're seeing the blaring media. I mean, the media blaring all this hype and fear, and the theater perhaps we're seeing with the hospitals and. The effect creates the cause here. So this is why you're having the lockdown. This is, local politicians, mayors, governors may be doing it because they're being bribed or blackmailed or they're stupid. But the sort of the lockdown is to create the economic crisis, to create the conditions for the bailout.
Well, really what they did is they created a bubble in everything.
Yes, that's, yes, yeah.
So if you didn't have a bubble in everything, if you had a healthier more price discovery,
mm-hmm.
where everything wasn't hyperinflated, and this thing came along, and you kind of dealt with it in a draconian way. You wouldn't have a crash. And this crash is not over, by the way. If people are thinking about you got some great bargains here, forget about it. They're going to ratchet this thing down some more.
Yes.
So the thing is that. The essential ingredient was the bubble and everything itself, which they blew up. Step one, number one.
Yeah, this is something. This is a strategy that goes back, more than a century, because they were doing this in the late 19th century, but the system was more stable back then, so the extent of it could be less, like the panics of 1890 or 1892 or something, 1870s and these things. And you could talk about that was a product of the war, reverberation from the war, and what was going on with the reconversion back to the gold standard and the whole debate with the silver standard. That debate, but gold and silver, as a basis for money. But in 1907, you had the Knickerbocker Trust collapse to create the Panic of 07, which was started by a whisper campaign by J.P. Morgan to create the conditions to rationalize the creation of a central bank, which is unconstitutional, when they created the Federal Reserve System. The war comes along right after, conveniently, and then the Fed starts to monetize a whole lot of things, more or less expand its purview to finance the war, to inflate for the war, and this creates the conditions for the boom of the 1920s, a bubble, which then crashes, and this creates more centralization of power. And there's Norman Dodd, who people know him, are familiar with him because of his, he was the chief investigator for the Reese Committee, who was investigating the role of the great foundations in undermining American sovereignty and bringing out the very system we're seeing rolled out today. But what he uncovered in part of his investigation, or at least what he admitted during an interview back in the early 80s, was early on he was brought in to look at the banking system, to propose reforms to stabilize it, to avert these panics. And he came, more or less produced a plan for full reserve banking. But he was told that the people that run the banking system, the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, the Harrimans and these people didn't want that. They want instability because instability creates opportunity for short-term profits, boom and bust. And if you can time the bust properly, know when the music is going to stop, you can make sure you have a seat when everyone else doesn't. So this is a strategy for centralization and plunder. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and their friends, their fellow flying monkeys are the ones that get the memos. Aunt Millie does not get the memos.
Well, this is why it's important. Before I interrupted, you're going into Steve Mnuchin's background. So
Well, let me flip back there because I wanted to kind of read the four steps of what we were just talking about. Okay. That I wrote this 3 years ago in my Parasite Guild series. Now, you know, eventually it happened. I wasn't making any short-term predictions then because I didn't know. I didn't know how far they were going to run this thing. But step one, the bankster cabal primes and pumps unsustainable economic bubbles conjured from lies and garbage. Then, as planned, it pawns the garbage off on unsuspecting patsies and Aunt Millies using, I mean, my general term for Aunt Millies means pensions, using exotic financial instruments, thereby creating a monster wealth transfer. So there's the first wealth transfer because they're using Aunt Millies company money to buy stock, give themselves an option, inflate them by, do the stock buybacks massively to inflate the market. They're cashing in their options, cashing in. Then they pull the plug on Aunt Millie. Step two, the cabal or the crime syndicate, new underworld order, shorts the garbage, therefore facilitating a rout or a crash of the debt bubble. So that's underway right now. That's in process. Step three, during the crisis and collapse days, the Parasite Guild and Cabal swoop in like vultures to pick up the economic gems for a song. Well, they've just set up this ESF and these special purpose vehicles as exactly the vehicles that allows them to do it without putting themselves at risk. Follow? Step four, anybody that's still solvent is robbed to pay off the debts in full. This may include pension funds and taxpayers. A key mechanism in this cycle is going to be bank deposit bail-ins already employed in the European banking crisis. So I'll flip back to, we'll talk about the background of Mnuchin. And if there's any Trump-tards listening to this, listen carefully. Listen carefully about this Secretary of Treasury that this guy, Trump, has brought in to run this operation. All right, so Secretary of Treasury Steve Mnuchin is an associate of Vampire Squid Goldman Sachs and an associate of George Soros. In 2002, Mnuchin left his 17-year post at Goldman to run a credit fund set up by George Soros. You know, that's the guy that Trump tards thinks is the enemy? In 2004, Mnuchin and two fellow Echelberg former Goldman colleagues founded a hedge fund, Dune Capital Management, with the financial backing of another Echelberg, George Soros. In 2008, IndyMac Bank in Pasadena collapsed in one of the largest bank failures in U.S. history. Mnuchin led a group of investors, including funds ran by George Soros and other hedge fund and private equity titans, who bought it and renamed it One West from the government for $1.5 billion. Illustrating in spades how Parasite Guild has worked, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, guaranteed to cover a portion of any future loan losses. So in other words, they pretty much said, we're going to make you whole.
Giving it to them, yeah.
Yeah, just go for it. So they engaged in very draconian foreclosures. This bank had a lot of widows, what are called widows mortgages, where you kind of really leverage older people into kind of bad loans. A lot of foreclosures. They were very, very aggressive, kind of violated a lot of the laws. And so I've got a little note here saying, Mnuchin is an errand boy for international banksters. His background is as of actually a public information officer. He's not a financial genius. Why is he so trusted? Rothschild family member, perhaps? A trusted PIO, certainly. Proving ground with Sears. So he had another Echelberg that he did an operation on Sears and essentially looted that country, that company, I should say. They end up screwing the Sears employees out of their pension, while the Echelberg buddy looted the company. He has no humanity, no empathy, robo-filing foreclosures with One West. He ran the same method with Sears. And I have a photo here in my last article of side-by-side of Jacob Rothschild and Steve Mnuchin. And I'm just saying, nothing to see here move along. They look like cousins.
Yes.
Just blow your mind. And then it shows Jacob Rothschild flashing an Illuminism sign with his hands in this particular photo when he was a little bit younger. So that's the guy that's going to be running the big bucks. That's the guy that the bipartisan Congress has given the trigger to run these operations. We're in big trouble, folks. There is no way anybody's coming out of this well. I hate to give you the news. The taxpayers are on the hooks. The Mnuchin Rolodex is going to be very, very active. They have another crook by the name of Wilbur Ross that Trump brought in that's every bit as bad. I don't know what his role is going to be, but the real power is going to be Mnuchin.
Well, can we hope for some crumbs from the table?
I doubt it. These guys are greedy.
Mm-hmm.
They have, you know, they don't look at it that way. They look at us as cattle to be exploited.
Well, I mean, there is a chance.
On that note, I don't know where you want to go.
There is a chance that perhaps they've overextended themselves, overshot that because of the. Again, we're confronted with the contradiction of reality and the horror stories that we're being heard. That being sold to by the media, and as that extends further into early spring, I don't know if they can be able to maintain that. Again, we're seeing a doubling down of rhetoric of local mayors and governors, and I don't think we contribute that to just the stupidity because, if you look at it, it's obvious that if you do shut down an economy, you create far more misery and distress. And even illness than otherwise. Even if the Imperial College's estimates were originally correct, you're going to have far more lives destroyed than 2 million over the course of several years when you collapse an economy. Not to mention all the geopolitical problems. I mean, look what the Great Depression did. The consequence of the Great Depression did. You know, it created conditions for the Second World War. Again, all that wasn't unplanned, of course. So maybe that's part of the game. Maybe we're seeing some geopolitical wrangling behind us with China. We're seeing that. And also what happened, not just with the repo market, but also there's an oil war going on. I was looking at gas prices, and gas prices are late 1990 prices in my area, below $2 a gallon for unleaded regular. And, of course, the petrodollar system relies on the sale of oil, a brisk oil market with a decent price because that's what monetizes U.S. debt. And so the Russians have failed or refused to cooperate, and they're not holding back production. So we have that going on at the same time. You also have perhaps within – there could be a faction within this parasite guild which isn't quite as gung-ho or sees that, you know, They may not be afflicted with chutzpah, meaning that they don't want to go too far, that there's a balance here they have to strike. And maybe this is me being the relative optimist.
Well, that's why they're talking about letting people come back out of their houses for
yes.
a while.
But the thing is, once
people start protesting, let's say we get some protests against this nonsense, they'll basically pull the pandemic card back out and say, go back inside.
Yeah. And don't be too surprised that it's not beyond them to stage deaths, even poison people, to make that point.
Right. I mean, they'll just play that game incessantly, and people are such. I'm not going to say the word sheep, and I'm much more forgiving. Right now, I've kind of toned it down about my pajama people. I call them pajama people that are asleep. And I've been angry for a long time with pajama people, but I've kind of dialed it down. You know, I kind of go, oh, my God, we're really all in this together. And they're being horribly manipulated.
Yes.
Some of them may start to wake up. But the more they wake up, the more they're going to run this other operation, this gray state operation of get back inside. There's the pandemic's there. You know, you're endangering grandma.
Yes.
You know, what are you doing down there at the spring break? Don't do that.
Well, but
that kind of stuff.
In the article, you provide a chart, a graphic of the exchange stabilization fund at the center, sort of a spider at the middle of the web. And this funds all types of operations that can, create reality or create black swans and manipulate society, create mass trauma. One thing is, you have propaganda. The ESF funds a propaganda network, a derivative fund, the financial manipulation, a whole host of different frauds. It can
exchange. But imagine it being levered up from $50 billion to $4 trillion.
Yes.
What the allocation of that is.
Yeah.
That's sickening.
And it funds the medical frauds, like you said, HIV/AIDS fraud. And this is a part of the, again, we're seeing the cumulative effect of a century of propaganda, and particularly in the medical field. Because this, then again, the fear, it's almost like national security, how that was exploited in the 20th century with the threat of global thermonuclear war and the threat of the other, creating enemies abroad, financing them, and creating the threat, particularly the Cold War. And the Cold War was, boil it down, was largely a one big looting operation, a transfer of massive wealth to create the infrastructure for the technocracy that's being unveiled today. Within that Cold War, you had the pretext for all types of covert operations, which, again, they can carry out assassinations. They have the funding for it. They have the expertise for it. You can bribe or blackmail politicians to keep them from asking uncomfortable questions. I think we're seeing that now. The unanimity we're seeing on both sides of the aisle for the lockdown is curious indeed, because
the lockdown and the Parasite Guild operation.
Yeah.
They voted. They went full in on that one.
Yeah,
it was very easy. I thought it'd be a little tougher.
Well, then we hear, Ron Paul comes out with a video calling the coronavirus a hoax, meaning the fear. But then the next couple of days, his son, the senator, test positive, as they say, for coronavirus.
Right. Yeah, well, it's not
completely asymptomatic,
exactly,
by the way.
See, he kind of used the wrong term. It's not exactly a hoax. It's
no.
Staged. It's a staging.
Yes, that's what we have to talk about. Yeah, whatever reality there is to it, and that can be debated, is that they're building upon something. When you have an operation like this, a drill, there's they can piggyback on it. And so you have this thing in China, and the Chinese government has problems. They have a flu outbreak, which they have all the time, along with all types of health problems there for the reasons I stated earlier.
A flu outbreak that just, by sheer coincidence, happened 10 miles from one of the largest bioweapons centers in China.
Yeah. But even that bioweapon scenario can be set up to just, again, because then you get this whole idea of everyone's focusing on the virus, the outbreak, and this takes attention away from this heist that's going on and this technocratic coup that's being conducted. We're being led by people like Anthony Fauci, if you go into his record, in promoting the AIDS fraud. But again, this goes back to that decades of propaganda. If you're not skeptical of the medical system and the fact that it was long ago cartelized by the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds, and then you're set up, you're on board that train to be misled because you get into their propaganda in these things. Good example is the vaccine cult that they've created, where they've normalized vaccines, and now if you are skeptical of vaccines, even just the vaccine schedule, which makes no sense anymore, you become an anti-vaxxer. And now they have this pandemic, and this bug that's going to kill everybody. And if you're against that, you're sympathizing, or you become a collaborator with the virus, the same way you may become you support terrorism back in 2001.
Yeah, they're acting as if like it's a given. Once we have the vaccine, we're going to give it to you, probably mandatory.
Yeah,
and Denmark's already made it mandatory, so they're beta testing that already to see what the reaction is.
And the power that they're presuming to have. I mean, really? Really? You have this power? Yes. Just like, I didn't know they had the power to tell you to get back in your house. There is nothing. There are no provisions in the Constitution, for emergency powers. But this was again created in the 20th century, in the mid 20th century after the Second World War crises, and that they created. So each step in the name of national security, they make us all insecure, they make us all paranoid and insane. Look at the atomic era. If you look at stand back and look at the broader psychological warfare of thermonuclear warfare. We're supposed to duck and cover, and these things, these absurdities that the public was given during the Cold War, but the mass terror it created a very compliant populace.
Well, the other thing they did with this Harry Caray bill is they also eliminated the sunshine laws.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really do FOIA requests. You know, what are you doing?
Yeah. I mean, remember in 2008, it turned out that there was some 16 to $23 trillion in currency swaps that the Fed conducted. Just, you know, so, and Congress, I think one congressman, you know, Sherman, asked a question, Ben Bernanke. Ben Bernanke said, I don't have to tell you.
Right.
So there was no oversight. I mean, it's like, right. You know, and that here we have this, with emergency government, and this is where the change of government thing, which again, the pretext of this was the Cold War, emergency planning, which sounds prudent, but in the beginning it was done only in the event of a nuclear war, you know. But now in the 80s, they expanded it to cover any emergency deemed, you know, serious enough by the White House. And we learned in 2001, 2002 that perhaps change of government was implemented in 9/11. And the question is, when you have that, it's no oversight. And a couple of congressmen have tried to look into it in the past. One was Jack Brooks during the Iran-Contra hearings in 1987. And he was shut down, asking Oliver North, this Rex 84 plan, to arrest dissidents and critics of the government in the event of a war in Central America. They said, you know, this is, Daniel Inouye said, this is the type of question we have to get into an executive session because it involves a serious matter of national security. Turns out that part of Rex 84 was compiling a database of dissidents and enemies. And these were just people who were critical of the U.S. government's policies at the time. Then you have, I think it was Vic Fazio in the 2000s, early 2000s, was asking about the change of government in the wake of 9/11. And he was shut down. Turned out he didn't have enough clearance to ask questions about this. So if this plan can be implemented without any congressional oversight, you have an infrastructure, a secret government that can carry out all types of operations unbeknownst to the public.
And I think what people need to realize, too, that it's not necessarily a secret government involving a nation state.
No, yeah.
That's where everybody's kind of, this country, my country wouldn't do that. It's China or it's Russia or what, you know, whatever. That's not how this crime syndicate works. It's pretty much capture everywhere.
Well, it's transnational. This kind of started out in how the Rothschilds operated when he sent his sons to the five major banking cities to set up the banking system. And we saw this during the World Wars where the Warburg family, you know, the head of the German bank during World War One was a Warburg. Well, the head of the New York Fed during World War One, the United States, was a Warburg.
You know? Well, and let's take this into World War II and to the present time. Let's explore this ESF a little bit more, because I don't think it's a topic I wasn't even fully appreciated. I mean, I always thought as ESF as a manipulator, you know, messing with the gold market and that type of thing. But it's a lot more to it than that. So since World War II, ESF has been a secret weapon for funding these black ops of every sort. And during the war, the OSS, the precursor to the CIA, used it for covert financial operations to, quote-unquote, keep the Nazis out of Mexico and Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to accomplish this because the Secretary of Treasury, Morgenthau, was under no obligation to obey the laws of the U.S., and thus it kind of launched the ESF to fund black ops around the world for over 80 years. And there's a book called The War Behind the Iron Curtain, Peter Gross. There's a quote in there. He says, "The heart and soul of covert operations," advised the top lawyer of the intelligence services, Lawrence Houston, "is, quote, a provision of unvouchered funds and the inviolability of such funds from outside inspections." Now you've got $4 trillion of that.
It's quite a slush fund, yeah.
Quite a slush fund. They've really ratcheted it up. That's the worst outcome that people don't recognize of this whole operation, probably even worse than the quadrupling of and bankrupting of the Treasury.
Well, here's interesting. You talk about an operation funding black ops. Well, a black op like this could be a staged pandemic, what's called now a plandemic, which is an interesting term I think is getting out there, because we need to increase the skepticism. The same way that in the years after 9/11, you had this growing awareness of what an inside job was, meaning why would our government attack us? Why would the government attack itself? We don't understand that. Well, it wasn't the mailman. It wasn't the, you know, attacking us. it's more complex than that. It's the interests that have inveigled themselves, that have infested these very government offices, that are, you know, that have transnational interests that have that transcend these things, international banking and these things, and nation states and governments become instruments for their policies. So it's an understanding that, it wouldn't be the government. Wouldn't be our, you know, the U.S. government spreading a pandemic. No, it's done through characters like Mnuchin who have these ties to these banking families, like the Rothschilds and they represent those interests. So they come to a position with this background. That it's not like they emerged out of thin air or they're disembodied angels. They have a background, they have interest, and they're not going to cut those ties once they assume a government office, which pays them, I don't know, $180,000
a year. No, in fact, Rothschild's memo is get to work.
Get to work, yeah.
Yeah, you got a big job.
But here it went down, is we get a glimpse into this, is how would an operation like this go down? Well, look at Event 201. It gamed this, it war gamed this. So do you think conveniently this happened in October, and then within a few months, you know, the very scenario plays out? Well, in that, if you watch that Event 201, they have... They interface with people in the media, people in government, federal, state, and local, and so this could have been set up months ago. I mean, if you're conducting this type of global financial, political, and financial coup, this is going to be years in the planning, and this is where you big function of this is pumping the markets, so you can set people up to be robbed and these things. Another function of this is just establishing the infrastructure. And the infrastructure is there for this. Again, look at CDC. Look at who established the World Health Organization. And its ultimate objective is world government through world health organizing. See, it's a pretext to violating sovereignty, to getting control, getting agents throughout the government. And if you look at the history, it's not just venal or idea to pump profits for pharmaceuticals. That's there, of course. So you need that. And each ladder you go up, you have different incentives for this, for people to participate. You have the local mayors being bribed or blackmailed to carry it out. Then you have the governors. Then you have presidents. Then you have prime ministers who are either bribed or blackmailed to engage in this sort of thing. And they're installed long ago. And they're broadly carrying out the agenda anyway, where you're Boris Johnson.
Yeah, I think the degree of compromise in the world, even the global system, is just beyond imagination.
Well, this is where maybe something like the Jeffrey Epstein scandal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I kind of theorized it. I kind of had the thought in my brain when I kind of thinking about 9/11. How did they do this? How are they able to keep these people in line? I theorized it. And then along came Jeffrey Epstein that gave us the clues. Oh, young girls.
Yes.
Getting you on tape, and worse, probably. This is probably the more minor stuff that we're actually seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wrote an article about Ciudad Juarez in Mexico. There's all these – there's an incredible number of very attractive young Mexican girls just disappearing constantly. Constantly. And they're
– Well, this is the world they want to create, because in a depressed economy
– Oh, yeah. They got to just pick them off. Exactly.
It's like what happened in Eastern Europe, right? In the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War, when you have this huge source or population of attractive Eastern European women being sold off into white slavery.
Yeah, they're taking these girls out into these ranches out in northern Mexico, and they have airstrips. And somebody needs to look into that. There's people in Mexico theorizing it, but they're called conspiracy theorists, of course. Mm-hmm. Usually it's kind of women's organizations. You know, you're taking our girls, you're taking them out into these ranches, they're disappearing. And they're not just engaging in sexual activity. It's much worse than that. It's kind of a sadomasochistic thing.
Yes.
When you got that kind of compromise, and those kind of individuals are running your country that engage in that kind of activity, it just gives you the level of the dark triad evil that's out there.
And how it can be cured if you depress the economies of the West, the United States, again, you can have a situation where the elite were able to sexually enslave large sections of the populations, people become desperate. And that you kind of see it, that kind of goes on in Hollywood every day as you support the, or you promote the celebrity culture and the allure of fame, and you have young girls who don't want a, who want more than a, than a, what they consider a sort of a banal or mediocre existence, and they're, if they think they're attractive, they can go out and seek fame and fortune in Hollywood, and they're exploited. And just imagine that writ large, because as the situation becomes more desperate, that people will make that calculation, like they do, unfortunately, every day in countries like the Philippines or throughout Latin America. Also, you don't have a political, the system becomes so corrupt that those who do, the oligarchs, can pretty much not ignore what remains of the rule of law and kidnap people who are at their will, because they control the local governments, because local governments are indebted to them. Yep. Or even the federal governments, like Mexico, you know, where the federal
allies, they're above the law. They're above the law. If somebody like Prince Andrew thinks he can show up and be interviewed,
yes,
and pull that off, I mean, that just goes to show what an idiot he is. I mean, he was advised not to do it. He said, oh, no, I'm above all this. And he totally blew it. Although, I'll tell you what, I've analyzed that interview, and he was actually telling the truth a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't as much, but he, but what he was saying was just an admission.
Yes. Well, yeah, it's, if you tell the truth, I mean, the biggest lies are usually covered by truth. So it's a strategy. Yeah.
So you have another little. I just noticed this little item in the Harry Caray bill. The EPA has now suspended enforcement of environmental laws during the CV emergency. Isn't that something?
Well, that's interesting, because so often
turn it into a wasteland.
Well, because disease itself throughout. I mean, we have these various pandemic fears, whether it's a COVID-19 or Ebola. And there's some, question whether or not these things actually exist or they're the cause of disease. Just because you identify a virus or what they call a virus doesn't mean that's a causal factor in a disease state. And then this goes into the problem of the testing, because the PCR test doesn't count the number of viruses, which according to virology is crucial to determine whether or not it's the cause of a disease state. Meaning there are many other factors or vectors for a disease state which aren't viral or there could be bacterial, there could be environmental. And look at Ebola, where they create the Ebola scare. And this, again, the Ebola thing was interesting a few years ago when they had that CDC nurse who broke quarantine, who tested positive. And this created the whole debate over quarantining. So that could have been preparing the public to accept an idea of mass quarantining, just for that debate. But the interesting thing with Ebola is, whether or not it's a virus. It looks like a parasite, but that's a whole other issue. Whether it actually exists as they say it exists, is Ebola is sort of a whole host of symptoms, hemorrhagic fever, disease, that are common in like a tropic area that's been subjected to civil war, dirty water, these things. So the whole types of poisoning, you dump pesticides, and you pollute the area, people come get sick and they blame a disease for it. And that appears what they did with Ebola. And at the same time, Ebola creates the fear because you have this whole narrative of an exotic disease emerging from the deep, dark jungle, right? You don't hear about the Des Moines flu. You hear about, the Wuhan flu because it's exotic. It's far away. It sounds mysterious. So they create this narrative of fear and mystery. That's an important thing about scientists. Although they claim to be objective and clear, they're very mysterious,
All the movies the same way.
Yeah, the movies they create.
Always have the scenes where it kind of comes out of the yes. bats and stuff like that.
Yeah, well, it turns out, like bubonic plague, it's you control the rat population and you're good to go. And that speaks to infrastructure and public sanitation, not a drug. But the whole point is the cause for these diseases are not necessarily a virus or a bug that has to be combated by a medical CIA, because that's what they create this environment where, like terrorism, right? Or everywhere there's a communist, everywhere there's a terrorist. So you need a CIA, covert operations, to combat this thing. Now you need a medical CIA to go out and investigate, look for a virus. And the CDC has an intelligence unit which its mission is to identify viruses. Well, lo and behold, that's their mission. They're going to find viruses as the cause. But again, basic critical thinking is they have never established a causal relationship. Again, there are many different causes for the symptoms that we call AIDS or the symptoms we call Ebola that exist in these countries that have nothing to do with a particular microbe. It's actually the conditions that are created by the bankers and the globalists that seek to impoverish these countries, keep them impoverished, exploit them, use them as dumping grounds for vaccines that are illegal in the United States. That's another thing. Or pesticides that are deemed illegal in the United States. Look at the Zika thing, the whole a few years ago. I remember the trauma they created with that, and just went away. It had nothing to do with the Zika virus.
Meanwhile, the problem reaction solution is to have some sadomasochistic pervert at the EPA suspend the enforcement of the law, environmental laws.
Connect the dots. But
here,
then they're going to create higher disease rates, which justify medical intervention when it's environmental. You know, look at 5G, and you don't have to. These diseases don't have one cause. You don't say it's all 5G. Well, no, it's a contributing factor. Electromagnetic radiation does cause health. Does cause health effects, coupled with maybe toxic,
How about the antibiotic cesspool dumping in India, where they have these antibiotic factories that just throw the waste out and create these highly resistant antibiotics that spread all over the world?
Yes.
I personally thought that was going to be the big one. Maybe they still have that one under in their quiver,
mm-hmm.
where the antibiotics all of a sudden don't work because of this super bug resistant strain. I've always kind of thought that would be, and this EPA move ties in perfectly with that. So maybe I'm predicting another one. I'm on a roll. I hate to admit it.
The fear of contagion creates the pretext for all types of operations: to quarantine, to keep to tell people to shelter in place, to stay in your home, and these things. So you have to address that narrative. You have to go, and the problem with that is then you have to go cast a skeptical light on these institutions that were looking for guidance. When again, this is given the history of the CDC, the World Health Organization, the people that run it. The corruption. I mean, come on. I mean, stop following them, you know.
Well, I think the other fallout from all this is going to be food, because in a lot of ways, the national reaction is kind of it's a natural reaction. You got countries like Kazakhstan closing their borders on exporting food.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing they're referring to it as food nationalism, which isn't really a very good term. It's protection.
Yeah.
You're trying to take responsible measures to protect your population. So countries that are doing this are actually doing the right thing, and they're being criticized because the globalists will say, oh, come on, you can't do that. You know, the food's got to move. But it's just a natural reaction to shutting down the world economy.
Yep.
So next thing you know, you're going to be seeing food shortages, much higher food prices combined with all this money printing going on, currency devaluation.
What's interesting,
so I'm looking for insolvency, serious inflation, currency devaluation, much higher food prices. And I think they timed this with this concept of, I don't know if you've had any shows or any discussions about dark winter, cold sunspot cycles.
Oh, yeah. Into that? I have shows about it. I'm familiar with the Maunder minimum or something.
Yeah, they have a sunspot cycles kicking in, colder weather.
Yeah.
So just when they start priming the pump for global warming, they know damn well that there's a cold cycle coming. So they get everybody offside on that too. A lot of malinvestment. So the price discovery is gone, a huge amount of malinvestment on top of previous malinvestment and poor planning because the information isn't good. Throw in these curveballs. It's just a big giant heroin overdose. So I don't see how anybody could be bullish, unfortunately. Oh, let's go over Wilbur Ross.
Okay, yeah.
I just came across my notes on him. This is for you Trump-tards out there. Wilbur Ross was I give him an F as Commerce Secretary, and I think he's going to play a role in the pension aspect of it. He's a total epic fail. He's dubbed the King of Bankruptcy. His background is a corporate raider who built his $3 billion fortune through the takeover of struggling companies. There's going to be plenty of those. And then he wipes out the jobs, cuts the wages, and eliminates the pensions of hundreds of thousands of workers. And with these methods, he's known for flipping entire industries. And he, before he got on board the Trump-tard administration, he was employing the these parasite guilt methods in Europe. So Trump brought him in. For 24 years, he worked at the New York office of Rothschild Company, where he ran the bankruptcy restructuring practice. He's a Rothschild agent yes. in bankruptcy. It's his thing. He's very successful at it. In the 1980s, after quickly expanding the reach of Resorts International to Atlantic City, Trump found himself in financial trouble. It was with the assistance and assurance of Wilbur Ross, then senior managing director of Rothschild Incorporated, that Trump was allowed to keep the casinos and rebuild his businesses. Connect the dot. You know, nothing yeah. to see here. Move along, folks. Come on. We're past that. We're way past that.
So, I mean, well,
let's keep an eye on what his role is. Yeah. It's kind of unclear, but it's got to be something.
Well, you're talking about the effects of sort of the shuttering of these smaller, mid-sized businesses. I think technically a small business is 500 or less employees, which is really mid-size. And those businesses employ over half of the American people. I'm talking in America, just in America. I think those of 100 or less employ like 35%, and those of like 50 or less employ 30%. So this is still a key vehicle or pathway for people's upward mobility, stable income, and opportunity in the United States. And also real productivity, by the way. These are the trades and these things that actually get things done in the United States on the ground and locally in these things. And so when you shutter them, and believe me, even businesses that aren't really directly shuttered will be shuttered as the economy declines because demand's going to go down. There won't be the money there to support them. They're not going to come back. And so what's going to be there is these larger corporations, big box stores, chain operations are going to be in a position to fill the void, particularly like the restaurants and bars and these things. I've seen a disturbing trend in business.
Yeah, that's really true in Europe. Yeah. These European countries are kind of, you got a lot of cool little shops and locally mm-hmm. owned and restaurants and things like that. And the problem here in this country, I don't really like to talk about the Czech Republic because I consider myself a guest here, so I don't mm-hmm. want to be at all critical. But the problem here is they can't collect the taxes from these small operators. They collect everything through VAT.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's true all over Europe. And yeah. so it's much easier to get McDonald's in there or Starbucks or somebody like that because you can rely on the tax receipts.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's one of the how Europeans cope with the high tax rate is they don't comply. Compliance right. is lower. People always talk about that. Yeah, but they don't pay it. It's you know, it's because really that
they're
happens.
They're supposed to collect the VAT. I mean, the VAT is 17%.
Yeah,
here.
But then there's enforcement. But you know, a tax rate. You know, people have done this. If a tax rate is a certain level, it's self defeating because people don't comply. They cheat more. You know, it's one of those things. So there's a self limiting there, even to any tax rate. Also, a lot of distortion in the process. But here's the sociological effect of these things. And I think this is being gamed as well. People talk about woke capital and these corporations be behind the global homo agenda of promoting degeneracy to create a more atomized consumer-based, you know, a society, which we're seeing the effects of now. Because if people are atomized, they're even more vulnerable to this as opposed to if they live in a community where they know each other, extended family, these things. This is something that global capitalism destroys, is the localism and also people having roots in the community.
And now these countries are going to stop exporting food to you.
Yes, and now what
now
do you have?
What are you going to do?
You don't have local farmers markets. You've long.
Yeah, now what are you going to do?
Yeah, dependency, that's another thing. And this is political, but the point that I think this might be war game as well is if you destroy local companies, small companies, these are companies that are run by independent people or families. They're not into the global homo crap like Target or Chick-fil-A or McDonald's. So people can operate economically and not be subjected to the psychological warfare and mind control that the Human Resources Department, these various corporations, impose on their employees. So once again, not only do you destroy a basis for economic independence and local economy, because again, the money these companies raise deposit in the local banks and they keep the money local for the most part. When you do it in a corporation, McDonald's, it doesn't do that. It's a very different economic operation going on there. Everyday low prices is also everyday low wages, by the way. There's a function there at Walmart. Mm-hmm. You create a situation where people can be more easily psychologically manipulated to go along with the global homo agenda, because now they work for a corporation and it's corporate policy, HR policy. Whereas if they work for a smaller company, you can say, the heck with that's nonsense. I'm too busy to worry about that. And you're going to have that effect, you know.
Well, I guess the way you deal with it is you just drive these companies, small companies, out of business and force you to go back into the global system. And yes. Meanwhile, the borders are being shut down, so you can't get the goods, and then you're really in a mess.
Well, I mean, so this is the situation, and I think we've made the case this morning or this afternoon.
Yes, we have made the – ladies and gentlemen, we have made the case.
That if you look at the timeline –
And for those of you who think that I'm just referring to Trump-tard as the only problem,
no.
This is Hegelian dialectic.
Mm-hmm.
It's dialectic bipartisan politics that you need to get past.
Yes.
It's not about Hillary versus Trump. It's not about Biden versus Trump or Bernie or whatever. These are all criminals.
Now, the point of, again, the point of our conversation, the point of this show, the point of other shows talking about this, you know, on the internet, because you're certainly not getting this from anything in the mainstream media networks, of Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, or that, is to raise consciousness and awareness of this, because that's key to this, is the idea that perhaps what they've done is this is a bridge too far, they've gone too far, and you can create a crisis in the regime, confidence in the regime. I'm not too optimistic about that, but we have to hope for that. And if that were the case, I wouldn't be bothered talking about it, is get an understanding of this. And we've made the case, again, if you look at the timeline, you had the financial markets in September and late fall having been backstopped by the Fed, the collapse of the repo market. Then you have Event 201. Then you have the virus, the outbreak, which is a pretext for public health measures, which shut down the economy, which then create the excuse for a huge bailout and restructuring of the economy. It's this also coupled with the technocratic agenda that Bill Gates talks about rather proudly, and these foundations are involved in ID 2020, forced vaccinations, global monitoring. You have the Prime Minister of Canada, Boy Trudeau, talking about using cell phones to monitor people. They've been doing that anyway, but now they're using it as a pretext to impose quarantining based on where you are, if you're next to a hotspot in these things. And the history of the medical cartel, and it's used by the oligarchs to impose control, to rob society, to make it sick, and these things. So the bigger picture here is we're seeing this unfold, but there's a history to this that, you know, we've laid out here. So people have to be aware of this, because then if you're not aware of the bigger picture, none of this seems to make any sense. You're confronted with stupid politicians doing reckless things. No, they're not stupid. They're evil, and some of them are stupid, or, you know, to the extent that they're, I guess, what rank they are. But basically, the policy we're seeing isn't panic. It isn't stupidity. It's a plan to shut down the economy so everyone can be made a lot poorer, and very few become a lot richer, and impose a feudalistic control on a planetary, you know, prison planet. If I may, shout out to Alex Jones.
Yep.
So,
yep.
That's what's being done here. The solution,
and in the short run too. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is
you got the punchline? You got a solution. The punchline.
The bigger picture is debt's too big. Needs to be written off. Restart. A global jubilee. It's radical, but it's a lot better than what they have in store for us.
Yeah, it's basically what you do is you bring back Gottfried Fedor's issuing legal tender vouchers for completed labor to cancel all this debt.
Yes.
And wipe the parasite Gildas out.
He was the German banker who stopped the international speculation against the German mark in the 1920s. And stabilized.
Yeah, he called it plutocratic big loan capital, and they issued legal tender to cancel the national debt and deal with the parasite gills. The first debt to be exchanged would be certificates held abroad that are paid off at discount. So all the money that gets issued from all this debt goes out there, and it's essentially a bill or a voucher for completed labor. You have to go hire somebody with it. You pay labor with it.
Yeah, you need either gold or production to back your currency. Yes,
it's got to be production.
Yes.
Gold's not no good.
Well, gold is subject to as we can see, it's subject to, well, the same type of manipulation.
I mean, gold's okay. Gold is okay for personal protection. I'm not saying anything wrong, but it's in terms of reforming all this. But it's not going to happen. They're going completely the other direction.
Yeah,
they're expanding this whole corrupt ESF. $6 trillion worth of whatever.
Now with the Treasury, now this is again, I'm looking at, I heard some speculation that this is, it's a very fluid situation, and those that have started this, and this is a big operation. This is historical. This is a big operation. I think this even dwarfs 9/11, which was largely a financial operation, by the way. We talk about the $400 billion bonds or fraudulent bonds that were cleared because of 9/11. This was the Operation Jackhammer that was used to finance the collapse and raping of Russia in the 1990s. That was part of the operation, all the other shenanigans that occurred on Wall Street that day. But not to mention the subsequent mass transfer of wealth that you can broadly call the war on terror, security theory in these things. But what I'm trying to get at, I lost my train of thought there. Oh, no, and yes, what I'm trying to make is that the situation is very fluid, and perhaps those who started it may not finish it, meaning perhaps there'll be some intervention. Wait, this is too far. It's going too far. There is.
Well, I think that's why they did this, so they could reinforce their ranks with this Harry Caray bill.
Meaning
this expansion of getting Mnuchin running so much money.
Operation like this is monolithic. I mean, you have a lot of people having to do mid-level work for you. You might see this and say, whoa, 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 whoa. So there could be some tempering. So these are very complex operations. And when you're playing with humanity, it's not like moving pieces on a chessboard. Human beings are dynamic, individually and also population. Well, you have a very interesting, countries like to the extent that Russia is independent from this, who knows? But the leader of Belarus came out and said,
love that guy.
this is a mass psychosis. COVID-19 is a mass psychosis. Go out, drink some vodka, do some physical work outside. You'll be fine.
I love that guy.
So
he's a dictator. He's a dictator.
he might have to be taken out. The exchange stabilization fund.
The guy seems like a dictator that wants to kind of has some caring for his people. Maybe he's not a total dark triad.
Yes. You know,
that's what's so ironic.
It's like the Democratic guys are the worst because, the Democratic system, the liberal order, there's so many vectors for infiltration and corruption by those who want to do it. And, of course, you've done history out of a parasitic guild or Sabbatean cult that is well organized and has the ability to do this, and they apparently have done it, and that's what we're seeing. But that in that process, there are going to be factions. And I'm not invited to the eyes wide shut parties, so I'm engaging in what some people call high octane speculation here. So there is a time for speculation. So I'm also trying to hope a glimmer of hope here, you know, that if we fight back. You know, if there is some people just simply not following shelter in place orders, going out, taking your kids out to play, go back to work for Pete's sake.
You don't have to comply, but don't get yourself in trouble.
Yeah, be smart about it. But saying is, and even at the local, our state and local police, a lot of them are orcs just following orders. That's true. But listen, some a certain amount of people, what the heck's going on here? They need to be people mind controlled. So you have to fight back with the mind control. The way you fight back with the mind control is speak out about it. Talk to people about it.
Yeah, or get in your car and drive by these hospitals that are supposed to take your friends and your family. Hey, let's go for a little drive. Let's get out of here a little bit and drive over to these hospitals. They're supposed to be so full of these COVID cases.
And they're
empty. Have a look around.
Yeah.
And just ask the question, is the rubber meet the road? Is this connecting? Is this, ask the trivium questions. Who, what, where, when, how?
Mm-hmm.
Or get online and find it. I mean, some of these videos that people are making are great. Somebody, guy was over at a hospital last night taking pictures of this so-called quarantine tents. It's just nobody's there. Nothing.
I saw a guy in Arizona, Tempe, Arizona, going to various hospitals, and you're just all kind of quiet. So what's going on? Everyone's sick? No. No one's here. Usual day here. And he's asking each nurse, do you know what a virus is?
I mean,
no one can tell them what a virus is. By the way,
I'm a big believer in embarrassing them. That's kind of my thing, kind of what I do.
Yes.
You know, I did an article on Tom Hanks and his tomfoolery.
Well,
that's how you resist. That's really how you resist. And you got to really get engaged in that. It's kind of I don't know what the term for it is. It's kind of Fight Club.
Yeah, it's interesting because I remember when this whole thing started, I was telling my wife, this thing isn't real. She was, you know, this isn't real. Look at this. I'm telling you, they're faking it, you know. And then
they're
each day.
They're faking a lot of it. They're faking a lot of it.
Yeah, well, that's what I really mean by this. Yeah. But yeah. I said, pretty soon, we're going to have some celebrities popping up. And it happened. Yeah. Next day, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And then you wrote that article.
Yeah, I thought it would be. I was guessing Oprah, so I don't always get it.
Yeah. Idris Elba. You know, oh no. Some politicians.
Weinstein. Or Harry. What's his name? Weinstein.
Yeah. And then they're emptying the prisons.
Prince Charles.
Prince Charles is a cold, apparently.
The Prime Minister Boris Johnson.
Yeah, Trudeau's wife, apparently.
Come on, give me a break. And I mean, you know, if it's that widespread, five congressmen, that you figure that's 1% of the population of the United States. You should have 3 or 4 million people infected right now. You should be able to see it. You should know people that are infected.
Well, how Not are just, cabinets meeting? And how are parliaments and legislatures meeting to pass trillion-dollar bailout schemes while exercising social distancing?
Yes, totally inconsistent. Yeah. But you would have lots of evidence. Right now, if the tsunami is coming, you should have lots of evidence that it's occurring. And it's time to wake up.
But what I find so troubling is a lot of people in the so-called dissident right have gullibly just accepted all the numbers, and they're preaching, you know, their doom and gloom.
Authoritarian
measures. And from the get-go, it's like, wait a second. You believe the CDC, the World Health Organization, you know, and you call yourself a dissident?
Dissident right, my ass, exactly.
You know, it's like, whoa. You know, and there was a video in New Jersey I just saw, and this is another side story. They closed all the schools in these New Jersey townships, but none of the Jewish schools are complying, and no one's enforcing. And you have these people who's outraged. It's like, well, this is the first. Do you expect the Jews to be treated the same? Come on, I mean, they're Jewish. They're not. They don't.
Well, now they're talking about Rhode Island is closing their borders to New Yorkers. I mean, I thought this is America.
That's unconstitutional. Yes.
Yeah, so you can't. States are closing their borders.
Well, I mean, you know, if the governor of America can tell you to get back in your house, then can a governor, you know, quarantine the state? Can the president quarantine New York? If Cuomo can tell people to stay in their apartments, dingy New York apartments, can president quarantine New York City or the region? You know, I'm just throwing it out because I'm just saying.
I think that's what he's looking to do, isn't he?
I think he's playing a game. I think he's serious. I think Trump does this, and his way of playing it, sort of using Cuomo's logic against him, because Cuomo's been up there with, what's that idiot in California, Gavin Newsom. 25 million cases. I just made that up. You know, we need 50,000 medical beds. Meanwhile, all the hospitals are perfectly
well, you know, if somebody challenges for not being empathetic and not caring about grandma, you have to point out that there is a treatment for this now.
Yeah. And their measures, any cold and flu season, you get more careful with the retirement homes, with people. If you're feeling sick, even in church, they stop doing peace be with you and shaking hands during cold and flu season. But they've stopped, you know, ordinarily this time of day, I'd be in church right now. But they've closed the masses in my diocese.
I mean, I'm 69 years old, so I'm not stupid. I wash my hands. And my son's kind of said, you need to wash your hands. You don't, you pick your nose and you rub your eyes too much, Dad. You know, so
yeah, I mean,
try to stop doing that. Wash my hands. You know, carry these little Pampers around, and when I go to the ATM machine or doorknobs or whatever, I do all that. I'm not saying don't do that. Don't get stupid, but don't let them turn you into a slave either.
Well, they've done that. I mean, we have a situation where you have this. What's her name? Burks, the doctor. Who has ties to PEPRA, which is the presidential emergency something on age relief or something, which is a whole scam Amazing Polly has done some good videos on this, the networking here. Again, you have to look at the networks. You have to almost draw a schematic here to understand what's going on here.
Right.
You know, and that's the problem. They say, well, you're a conspiracy theorist. I don't know. federal prosecutors all the time to go after mafia figures. That's how you solve a crime or establish a pattern. There are criminal networks. And when you have criminal networks, you have to draw schematics and make connections. But anyway, she's sitting there.
We described one today.
You did, exactly.
Secretary of State, Treasury Mnuchin.
Yeah, exactly. There's a schematic here. And, you know, there's connections. And then, you can motive means an opportunity. But she's sitting there lecturing us on washing her hands. It's like, really? I mean, come on. Are you my mommy?
That's kind of what my son did with me. You don't wash your hands properly, Dad. But that's okay coming from your son.
Exactly. But, you know, now it's like we're being dictated to. And if you look at her background, she's, again, another character, another parasite member that you don't want to put trust in. Same with Anthony Fauci, who pimped AZT for years, killing untold numbers of people with that drug, you know. But I predict this
is going to blow over in the next couple of weeks. There's going to be kind of a relief period, but it's not over.
No, because we're in an age of trauma and fear, and this has been the story since the 20th century, and it has increased along with the reach and capabilities of mass communication. We saw that with the Halloween Eve broadcast of War of the Worlds. That was a test. It wasn't an accident. And this was studied by the Princeton Radio Research Project in conjunction with the U.S. War Department. And they were gaming a situation. They were getting us ready for war. And, of course, in the Cold War itself, mass communication itself, the research and refinement of it was carried out by the CIA and the Defense Department. And we saw that, with the drop duck and cover warnings, the 1950s, these absurd, it was the turtle with a shell or something, little cartoon character, he'd hide under a shell when they dropped the bomb or something. And this is for adults and children. And so we saw that with the AIDS epidemic, when we were told how horrible AIDS was going to be. And this became a pretext to unleash radical sex ed education programs to actually, ironically, to promote degenerate lifestyle, because the HIV hypothesis actually creates a rationale saying, rather than AIDS being a cautionary tale against a certain lifestyle, drug addiction, prophylactic use of antibiotics, and also the gay bathhouse lifestyle, it gives one single virus is going to get you. It can get us all. Well, now we have to, teach second graders how to put condoms on bananas. And this was this was written up. This was war gamed, and planned out by the U.S.
Well, they have us all on artificial intelligence. Have every one of us profiled. They pretty much know what we're going to do in terms of a social hurting or any kind of reaction. So they know exactly when to withdraw the they don't want to necessarily drown you. They just want to dunk you.
It's waterboarding.
Waterboarding. Bring up for a little breath of air and go, oh, thank you. Oh, thank you for sending me that $1,200 check. It means so much to me. You know, that type of stuff. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they know when to take it off the pedal.
Have you
seen
–
when to put it back down.
Was it Anthony Curtis, Century of the Self, that documentary?
No.
It's very good. I recommend you see that. He's kind of conservative establishment, but what he – talks about in that he talks about Edward Bernays and the conditioning and these things, the 20th century, how leaders needed to control the population, as opposed to the population, electing and controlling their leaders. And that's what's happening here. And again, it's the reach and capabilities of these things increases with technology. And then the irony is we're here talking on the internet using smart devices to criticize the system, but the system itself is enabled through, the internet, which is, I think, originally set up to be a control grid, So that's what we're
doing. Well, all I know is this evening I'm going to get together with three friends and drink some beer.
Do that.
in my apartment.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Because everything is closed.
Everything is closed. Because, the pubs and taverns will be able to get together and talk about these things. They don't want that.
Yeah, I get to put the videos on. I have my little video of Jason Goodman showing all the empty hospitals. Everybody can do that. You can have a beer too. It's fun.
Yeah, it's. for a lot of people, it's hard to imagine. But listen, it's very easy to create the theater of this. if you have the media on board and politicians on board and closing, imposing, local, in effect, quarantining areas, shutting things down, because again, the effect creates the cause. It must be bad because they wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't bad. No, don't look at it that way.
No.
Again, the lockdown, the shutdown is to justify the economic reset or reshuffling that's occurring, the stealing that's occurring that you write about in these articles. And that's the cover. The virus is the cover for this. And it's a pretext, again, for imposing more control, more fear, creates more control. You know, it's kind of like a 12 monkeys scenario that we're seeing played out here.
Yeah, and they treat the $6 trillion bazooka as not Harry Carey. They consider it saving mechanism. They're wrong. Yeah. They weren't wrong again.
No.
They're going to be proven wrong again. And when they are proven wrong again, I hope people connect the dots.
Hopefully, again, 9/11
takes off on them. And
think about it before 9/11, how I viewed the world. And in the ensuing years, it was gradual for me, how I came to that event kind of
me too.
Gradually woke me up. It wasn't immediate. I was traumatized as everybody else, not knowing what to make of it. And in the ensuing years, I just did the research, and my understanding of things changed. That's how it should be, as you learn. And perhaps this event, I think it's going to add on to even more people now are become more critical, more normal people. What I mean by that, normies are now going to look at this and look at the absurdity of it all and become more cynical or more skeptical rather. And
Even asking a simple question, was this good policy? Did you do the right thing, Congress, doing this? Is this the correct policy?
Yeah.
I mean, once you get past spending your $1,200 check, what?
Yeah.
You know, then what happens to you?
Where do I spend it when all the stores are closed?
Good point. That's probably why they're going to reopen.
Yeah. But when they do, they've taken a couple steps forward towards that the ultimate revolution that Huxley spoke of, and I think that's what we have.
You think people go nuts? You think the people, when they get out, they'll just go to Six Flags over Texas and try to bust into Disney and do that? Or
there might be a consumer boom. It's hard to predict how the economy is going to respond to this, because when you shut down an economy, I mean, a lot of people are talking about gloom, I think, or initially, but then these things have effects. Like years later, it could reverberate, or the effects people won't originally identify. You know, a good example is with the Great Depression, people didn't identify the crash with the Great War 10 years before, but there was obviously a relationship because the situation, the circumstances for the Great Crash, the boom, were created by the war and sort of the misallocation or the disruption of economies, the collapse of the gold standard, classical gold standard, and also the policies that were implemented in the 20s to sort of smooth over the cost of the war. Great Britain didn't want to, during the war, they sort of established a proto welfare state for veterans. And they when the war ended with all that debt, they needed to cut back, but no politicians didn't want to cut back on their welfare state. So what they did is they floated the English pound. And to do that, you needed to devalue the US dollar, which created, the credit boom, which ultimately created the crash. I think all this was thought out. Again, if I can look at it and say this is going to be a consequence, it's what's going to happen. Economists could, and economists did, by the way. So it's hard where people, 18 months from now, if there's a crash where they connected to today's policies, it's hard to say. There's a lag time. So there could be a short-term boom with consumer spending or something because people are.
There probably won't be a boom because people are really out of money, but their behavior might be kind of
interesting. But another thing is perhaps there's a reordering. This is an opportunity to people to reevaluate. Maybe they don't need booms, meaning you don't need so much money if you're not buying things, so you don't need things. Maybe the experience of having the wife home tending to her kids' education because the schools are closed. I kind of like this.
Yeah, just going out in the sunshine and getting some sun on your face and that kind of little simple things.
So
be interesting.
What if we readjust
on some of that stuff? I'm optimistic.
Yeah. So what if we readjust our material
beings? It's like being out of a prison. in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
But some people are going to be a little nuts. You know, you got some people that are probably damaged by this.
Well, it could be like the end of Logan's Run, if you ever see that 70s sci-fi where they break out of the bubble and that they're in the real world now. You know, they don't tell you what happens after that. But you know, they're in a society where everything, all their needs are they're controlled, and they have to die at age 30 and these things, but life is luxurious. Then the system collapses for reasons, and they're out in the world and they're free and they see sunshine. Again, people might look at this and go, wow, we don't need as many things that we're told we need, and we need to reevaluate our, we need to get more local and more decentralized in these things. And
yeah.
Maybe
that's where it could backfire on the crime syndicate.
Yeah. Right, they
probably have gamed it out. That's the thing.
Yeah. But
they got it gamed out.
They think they're in control, but they're not in control, because there's always the unknown. There's the cunning of reason, as Hegel said, meaning that the plans they make ultimately is their destruction. This is being the long-term optimist. So in the short term, we have to do the right thing, fight it as much as we can, and be smart about it, and not despair, because despair is a sin.
And I hope on that note, I hope people make it to the end of this interview, because that's good.
Well, it's a chance to point.
I feel again, much better.
This is an opportunity to me to point to people. Yes, if you didn't understand 9/11, okay, you're bamboozled. But look at this. This is even more absurd than 9/11. But I'm finding breakdowns. People who understood 9/11 have a whole lot easier understanding this. People who are still bamboozled by 9/11 are saying, "What the heck's going on?" Well, it's connected. It's connected. But again, this isn't crazy. When we talk about, this is a conspiracy to control the world through finance, through technocracy, these things. This has been written about by the very people who comprise the establishment and their intellectuals, like H.G. Wells and Bertrand Russell. Anyone who's literate knows who Bertrand Russell is. He's a major 20th century philosopher. And he said this, a part of the establishment. And he says, diet injections and injunctions will combine from the very early age to produce the sort of character and sort of beliefs that the authorities consider desirable, and any serious criticism of the powers that will become psychologically impossible. That's Bertrand Russell.
Yeah, they've kind of come along. They're pretty close to that.
Yes, you know. So, yeah. Well, listen, Russell, I almost had it on for almost 2 hours now, so I want to thank you.
Okay, thank you, Tim. Goodbye, everybody, and good luck.
Go out and enjoy those beers and time with your friends. Shelter in place and maintain social distancing. Of course, they can follow your work at Winterwatch.
Winterwatch.net.
And there they can find these articles that you posted. They're within these articles, you have all the links, and you lay out sort of this. And all these articles, going back to February, kind of lay this out and make these connections. You also go into pretty good detail about this financial bailout that I think people need to know about. So right. I want to thank you for writing those.
Definitely. Okay. Thank you, Tim.
Take care, and we'll be in touch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.